Welcome back to the roundtable and our live broadcast from the Hannah Arendt Center for Politics and Humanities at Bard College, where their 17th annual conference, Joy, Loving the World in Dark Times, is going on just a few rooms down from where we broadcast from in Olin Hall. And it's a great pleasure to have an audience with us this morning and amazing guests who are taking part in the conference throughout, either took part in it yesterday or are taking part in it today. Ann Lauterbach is a poet and essayist. Her 11th collection of poetry, Door, is her most recent. She writes at the intersection of poetics, politics, and the visual arts. A recipient of a Guggenheim Fellowship and a MacArthur Fellowship, she is Ruth and David Schwab Professor of Languages and Literature here at Bard College. She's also a frequent participant in the Hannah Arendt Conference. At 3 o'clock today, she will be presenting a session of the Hannah Arendt Center's Joy Conference entitled Notes on Difficult Joy. It is a great pleasure to welcome Ann Lauterbach to the roundtable this morning. What a delight to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Excuse my throaty voice. It'll clear up.
No worries. I am just thrilled you are here. You have long been a part of this conference, obviously long been here at Bard. What is the do you think is the of having the Hannah Arendt Center, a conference, what does it give us the opportunity to do?
Us being the world.
The world.
The audience.
This community, the college community, the students.
There's something extraordinary about having a center that is focused on this one remarkable individual, Hannah Arendt. Her papers are here at Bard. She taught here. And it's not an academic situation. It's a kind of quasi-academic situation, so that we can have people here from all varieties of thinking and writing about a particular topic. And Roger Berkowitz is a kind of genius master at finding these people and discovering remarkable subjects which aren't directly necessarily pertaining to Arendt and particular writings of her, but sort of circulate, but are such that you can circulate her thinking through them. And that's a wonderful kind of opportunity to open a space that seems maybe a little esoteric and a little foreign to many. So he's made it possible for this extraordinary thinker to be living, actually. She stays alive here.
The idea of looking at joy seems to fit exactly what you were just talking about. It fits into that.
It does, although I think it was maybe slightly perverse.
How so?
Of Roger to come up with this particular theme. Well, I think the answer is obvious. It's sort of hard to be joyous in this particularly dark time. On the other hand, Arendt came into her thinking life in a dark time and managed to write these wonderful, wise, informative, clarifying books about being human. So, you know, in a way, it's perverse, and in other ways, it's just an act of genius to make us all, remind us all, in fact, of joy in a time when it feels quite joyless.
The book of her political theories, Amor Mundi, I mean, that is loving the world, seems that inherent in that would be a joy.
Right, but she didn't actually call the book Amor Mundi. She was thinking of calling it Amor Mundi. And she came to that sort of after the fact. The actual book, I think, is called The Human Condition. So The Human Condition, we might make a kind of sentence that goes something like, the human condition is to love the world, maybe something like that.
I mentioned the session that you're going to be a part of, Notes on Difficult Joy. How would you define difficult joy?
Funny you should ask. Well, I've been trying the last few days to define difficult joy, and also I'm really infuriated with myself for coming up with this title. It just seemed like, and in fact, in the beginning, I thought it was going to be not so much difficult joy as the joy of difficulty. So there's sort of two different ideas. I think that the joy of difficulty is closer to what I'm thinking about. And that is, there's one notion of joy that I think a number of people talked about yesterday, which has to do with pleasure and delight and immediacy and a kind of response in present time. And then I think there are other kinds of joys that are slower and come about maybe indirectly rather than directly. So among those might be reading a long novel that, you know, is difficult to read, but at the end of it, you find yourself in a form of joy for having received it, or listening to a piece of music you've never heard before, which is sort of startling and maybe even terrifying. And yet you wake into a sort of sense of, oh my goodness, that was transporting. I think there are all kinds of things that happen to us that are not directly joyful, but maybe become indirectly joyful.
Is that also the case with poetry?
Well, poetry has a reputation, doesn't it? Particularly out of modernism, for being sort of by definition difficult. And alas, I am accused of being a difficult poet. And I didn't really intend to be a difficult poet, but I think what people mean is that you can even tell by the way I speak. I don't have an idea in the first place. I have an idea in the last place. In order to get to the idea in the last place, you have to go through certain movements of thinking. And that makes it seem like I'm being indirect or even evasive or wanting to make something more complicated than it is. But I think I get an enormous amount of pleasure out of complication out of not wanting to simplify life into black and white and yes and no and the digital world of zeros and ones. This doesn't interest me at all. I'm much more interested in being confounded and unsure and then finding my way through to some kind of enlightenment or awareness. So my poems often come down to a place of direct statement, but they don't usually begin there.
But I would think in reading your work and with great respect to your work, that seems to me, and without oversimplifying it, that the joy and the enjoyment that comes from reading it is following that journey, is to get to you presenting and working your way through, which I think then makes the end more powerful because we have followed you from the very beginning.
Maybe, I hope so. I think my fantasy is that it isn't about me at all. It's about finding some track that I make that isn't my track, but it's a track that you could get on. And that you could, instead of thinking, oh, this is all about Anne, thinking, oh, some of this is about Joe, or you can relate back to something in your life. I mean, I think all literature wants to do this.
Sure.
Poetry has this reputation of being about the poet, you know, this kind of singularity. And I'm so not interested in that kind of direct reference to the self.
So how do you do that for yourself, and how do you then make it so that most likely the reader would not see that as well? Or not think about what you just said?
That's a good question. I think I always begin a poem with a fragment of language that comes into my head as a result of vacuuming or doing the dishes or staring out the window. There'll be this little piece of language. And if the piece of language has some vitality, I catch hold of it and think, well, where does this language want to go? And then it's like a living thing. And I think, oh, it wants to go here. And then I spend an enormous amount of time. I hate to tell you how much revision I do, because discovering what the piece of language wants to say or do takes a long time. It's not always obvious. So I don't think I'm actually answering your question.
You are. I mean, you had me at the vitality of a piece of language. It's amazing. But what do you know what gives it its vitality? I mean, does that come to you right away of, okay, that is, yes, that has a vitality. That,
you know,
that has something to explore.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I don't know that I could ever analyze how that happens, but it is like a kind of vibration, even maybe close to a tune or some kind of piece of music. And there's something about the frame of the phrasing of it that seems to have energy. And if I'm quick, I kind of try and grab hold of that energy and see where it is the next thing it's going to do or say. it sounds a little mystical, but it makes writing quite interesting, because it's like a slight removal from one's own narcissistic, totally self-absorbed world. It means that language is sort of outside of oneself, not entirely bound up inside oneself. And I think it's that listening or that watching or waiting for the language to come from outside, inside, and then out again. That's the thrilling, is the exciting part of writing.
And what about teaching? I mean, as a professor of languages and literature here, is that a difficult thing to teach students?
Do
you want to teach them that?
I think I try and help them to understand that even though words are invisible and less tactile than this cup or this jacket, that language is material, and that you can move it around as if it were clay or a piece of fabric, and that gives them a certain kind of gleeful liberty. And I also try and tell them ad infinitum, actually, at this point, that they think, kids think, or students seem to think, that the poem is sitting inside them, desperate to get out, and that they have to go inside and find the poem. It's hidden in their inner being. And I say to them, no, 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 language is not, the poem is not inside of you at all. Language is outside of you. You came into the world, and language was here before you got here, and language will be here after you leave. So your job is to be the recipient of language. You can then turn it into a poem, and then you release it back into the world. So you're just a kind of conduit. And that gives them an enormous sort of sudden sense of freedom, that oh, I'm not, you know, inside of this interiority of this great poem, just can't get out, but I know it's in there. The great poem is the world. It is the poem of the world. It isn't the poem of the self, ever. And so I think when I give them that, there's something begins to get liberated or opened for them. And then we have a better time thinking about it.
That's beautiful. Ann Lauterbach is our guest, and she will be presenting a session at the Joy Conference, Notes on Difficult Joy, at 3:00 this afternoon. The new collection is Door, and she is Ruth and David Schwab Professor of Languages and Literature here at Bard College. What an absolute delight to spend time with you and to converse.
Thank you
converse.
So much.
I so appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
We will continue our conversation and have more from the Hannah Arendt Center and the Joy Conference coming up on WAMC after this short break.